Did you always want to make a movie about mothers and birth? Or like, how did this come to be? Where did you get this idea?
I was actually in Manila researching another film having to do with reproductive justice and reproductive rights. And while researching that film, someone said, you really have to visit Fabella Memorial Hospital because it's a baby factory. They call it the baby factory in Manila. So I did. And when I, my first visit there, I knew immediately that that was where the story was, right? I mean, making the film would still allow me to investigate all the same themes, talk about all the same themes I wanted to do. Like I said, women's rights, reproductive health, reproductive justice, and by just concentrating in this one space. And so that's really how it came about.
Okay, very cool. Does anyone have a question off the top here? So there's no interviews, there's no talks with experts, there's none of that, and that works so well. I think it's a really hard thing to do in a film to have it be successful. And so tell me, was this the doing it in a verite way? Were these specific choices you made ahead of time?
For sure. Yeah, I think my intention was to give the audience the very same experience I had visiting the hospital for the first time. Because I remember visiting the hospital, I was just like, sort of, I was dropped into this place that I had knew nothing about. And I tried to figure out what was going on, and I couldn't really figure it out until I did, right? And once you do, then it makes sense, and there's a whole kind of like organized chaos that goes on. It's like this choreography that goes on that was so interesting for me. So I wanted to give the audience that experience. So from the very beginning, I knew it was going to be purely observational, and I had hoped that the narrative would just emerge out of the film scenes.
Yeah.
And I got it. Just it worked out, right?
Yeah,
you never
absolutely.
Know.
Yeah. And one of the things that I think I didn't think about the first time I saw it, and the second time I thought, you prepare and you want to shoot a film like this, but you can't know these women ahead of time. Like, they're just coming in the door to have the babies, So, like, how did you? You must have just had to jump into the relationship with these women.
Yeah, I think key there was once I got permission, I actually had to go to the Minister of Health to get permission to shoot in the hospital because I wanted carte blanche, right? And I also wanted I wanted 6 weeks. Fabella had been covered in the past by the BBC, CNN, but they only just helicopter in, right? They come in for 2 days, and I wanted to be there for 6 weeks, and they couldn't really understand why, but they gave me the permission. But I knew I had to really make the staff understand why. So even if I got sort of this bureaucratic access, permission, if the staff didn't understand what I was doing, that access is no good, right? So I spent a month before actually filming, just getting to know the nurses and the staff. And by the time we started shooting, they knew exactly what I was looking for. So they became like my embedded producers. I called them my embedded producers because they knew I was looking for a really young woman, a teenager. They knew I was looking for someone older and someone in the middle. So they would say, oh, that woman, and that, they would point mothers out to me. I also knew the inner workings of the hospital. So when I saw the labor nurse come into Ward 4, I knew she was going to deliver a baby to a mother who had never seen her baby, right? So that happened with Leia. So I saw the ward nurse, the labor nurse, and I said, let's follow her because she's going to deliver a baby. And then, of course, in the permission with the mothers, right? It took a long time. I mean, they give me permission, but I think the most important conversation I had with the mothers was that it was important for me that they understand that I wasn't part of the hospital, that they could say no to me, and still get care. Because, of course, the power dynamic is very unequal, right? So that I had to make that clear. You can't say no, you will still get the care. I'm not part of the hospital. And a lot of women said no. And a lot of women said yes and changed their minds. And so we followed, I think, in all six. And then three are in the film.
Very interesting. One of the things I found interesting about it, and I know you mentioned like it's okay to laugh when we before we started the screening. I thought it was so interesting too to show that these women were talking about sex.
Yeah.
They were laughing. I mean, I thought that was such a great thing because we tend to kind of sanitize motherhood, don't we? And we, especially they've just given birth, right? But so it was so lovely to see them postpartum kind of, and in this community that was, were you expecting that or was that?
No, that was what really drew me, that those relationships that formed and communities that formed on the beds, right? And I heard their conversations and that really drew me to the story. Yes, I think beyond, mothers are always like sanitized. And I love that they're sexual, they're body, they're funny, they're, it's also poignant because of their situation. Yeah. And I was hoping that, you know, I'd hope that they would be, I could define them not by their poverty or disempowerment really, but by their human, you know, by their humanity.
Yeah, and I think you absolutely did that. I think that the whole, the staff too was so professional but so kind and so human, yeah. Right? And they could have been really mean to these women or talking down to them, or they could have, because they see so many women, and it could have been something that they are just, you know, treating it like a factory, and but they treated them all as individuals, and that was really touching.
Yeah, for me too. I thought they'd be just numbers, right? And they call everyone mother, right?
Right.
Mother. Mm-hmm. And everyone is mother, everyone is a number, but when you got down to it, it was very individual care, personal care. It's like, go back to high school, after high school go to college, those kinds of things, which was very touching and surprising. That was, you know, the thing that was very surprising for me.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. Does anybody have, yes, in the back.
So they were all real life performers, or how many were professional?
No actors or actors. This is a documentary, so all real people with no lines to memorize.
You too had to become part of the choreography. Can you talk a little bit about the craft? How many crew? How did you manage to capture the audio, especially?
Yeah, oh my God. Thank God for subtitles, is all I have to say. We were a crew of two, and that was a condition of access. We couldn't be more in there because it was also a very small space. So it was my DP and myself doing sound. And I haven't done sound since grad school, so it was very interesting. And the first day, and usually you wire them, you put the wireless mics in them. But the very first day we found out we couldn't do that because there was nowhere to put the transmitter. They had only hospital gowns and nothing more. Where do you put that? And I wanted to hide it, and you couldn't hide it. So he said, okay, we're here, let's boom it. So I boomed, and sometimes successfully, sometimes not so much. That was, and trying to, I don't think people ever really forget the camera's there. They just get used to you being there. And we, like I said, we were there for 6 weeks every day, except for one day because there was a typhoon. So we missed that day. But they were long 16-hour days. So they got used to us in a fashion, but never really forgot we were there. And with the mothers, you know, sometimes we'd put down the camera and or the sound gear, and we'd sit on the beds, and they'd be curious about us too. So we just have a conversation without ever shooting.
What was the hardest? When was the hardest point of the film? Which was the point where you said, "I don't know, I give up this project," or "I almost give up"?
I almost. I think the scariest was when we started shooting because I had to choose the characters, the women, after we already started shooting. So trying to find them and sort of identify them and them saying yes, right? That was the hardest part. But I think the hardest part, the hardest scenes to shoot were the stillbirths. We shot maybe three or four of them. They were the toughest. I think of it now, and yeah, they were tough. But conversely, the shooting the births were so life-affirming. It was very, birth is so breathtaking. Every time it happens, right, the baby comes out and you're like, Yeah, it really takes your breath away, especially if they're healthy babies. And also given the context and the circumstance, because it's very hopeful, but they're really being born into a very tough situation. And I remember my DP, who's never given birth before, and the first time we shot a live birth, and I've given birth before, so I was like, I sort of knew, but still was very surprised at how, like, mesmerized I was. And I turned to her, and this like, professional DP, okay? She was like tearing. And she goes, whoa. It's a very intense thing to film. And so after we shot every birth, we shot a lot of births, we'd have to sit down and just not talk. Like for like 15 minutes. Okay, let's take a break. We just sit and drink. I mean, not liquor. Like water or something. And just to, you know, decompress.
Thank you. Anybody else? Yes, here, sir.
Do you keep in touch with the woman? Did they get to see the woman?
They have not. We're showing this in the Philippines in December. So because I wanted to be there. And something happens in the Philippines. You know, it becomes more popular. It's more popular abroad. So it's a marketing thing. So the more I tour it, and the more it gets attention overseas, and the more they're likely to, a distributor will pick it up in the Philippines. And we're close to getting a distributor. And we're going to premiere in December. First to the staff at the hospital. We have found Leia, the woman with the twins, but we haven't found Lerma and Ira because they're squatters. You know, they move and their cell phones don't work, so we're still trying to track them down. I think Lerma will find, you'll find her everywhere. She's got to be somewhere. I just said, yeah, just be quiet and we'll hear Lerma. Because, you know, Lerma, she almost chose us. You know, we didn't choose her. There's always, I've filmed many documentaries, and there's always one or two people who, what I call, are the peacocks, right? They will show themselves to you. And Lerma was that. You know, she basically chose us, and we filmed her. Which paid off, which was great.
Yeah, she's a great character.
Anyone else? Yes, over there.
To the others, what did you say to the mother? What did you say about your project?
So I explained to them as much as I could that I was wanting to just film their everyday lives, particularly them, you know, because they gave birth prematurely. So basically I chose mothers who gave birth prematurely so I could follow them over 6 weeks. Otherwise, if you give birth to a healthy baby, you're in and out in 24 hours. And so there wasn't that time, you know, so it was very conscious. And I wanted to do KMC and stuff. So at first they would say yes and thinking they understood, but we were there every day. Then they were like, our lives are so boring, it's so routine. So I would try to say, explain, you know, I want to see how your life is here just every day. Just, you know, don't do anything extraordinary for us. And then I would talk to them about the themes, I was trying to get at, like women's rights, their rights to family planning, and all that. So we would have these conversations. And then after a while, I think then they understood what it was. But it was a long... You know, everyone is reared on reality television now, so they think they know what I'm wanting, like a very performative thing. You know, like they perform for me, they get into conflicts. I said, no, you don't have to do that. You just have to be yourself. And they sort of... Then they got to... They got to understand it over the 6 weeks. So it was just this peeling of an onion. Like, more and more they understood it.
And how come so many women hesitate when it comes to birth control?
Yeah, many factors. So the question is, why do women, you know, turn down birth control? Many factors. I think the biggest is the church. You know, the Catholic Church is very powerful in the country, in the Philippines. So there's that. And... and the priests, I mean, they make it a point to talk about, you know, they're against contraception, talk about that in church, in sermons and stuff. So they use, you know, they use it as a bully pulpit, right?
Yeah.
That, and culturally as well. Also one of the other big factors is the lack of education. So they don't really understand what this IUD does. It's a foreign thing in their system. There's like myths about it causing cancer. So all that mixed together, you know, and they don't really understand. They're not, they don't have agency over their bodies as well. So that's why they turn it down. You know, so it's gonna, you know, that's the point. I mean, that's what I'm hoping with this film to like really start having this discussion.
And the stuff that, I mean, talking about the IUDs, talking about the, what do they call it, sterilization, what do they call it, the tubes tied,
ligation.
Yeah. But those, it was so important, I think, to have those in there, and the different discussions of why they didn't want to do it, and like my mother doesn't want me to, right?
Yeah.
But
I think what's also very interesting about those conversations is there was never a conversation that they had autonomy over their bodies.
Right.
It was never a question of turning down sex, right? Because... It's just always like, when you get home, your partner, husband, boyfriend will want to have sex with you. You have to protect yourself. So there's a very clear gender role there. Yeah, I did. I mean, yeah, and hopefully some of that is in the film. Yeah, but we would have all these conversations with the staff. And, you know, they're really, those are the scenes that the church will really mind in Manila. Because they really... Like, they can't coerce women, obviously, to accept the IUD or any kind of birth control, right? They can't seem to be coercing, but they really, they're straddling a very thin line there. And I think the church will jump on those scenes and say, see there, we shouldn't allow it because they are like forcing these women to have, to take the IUD or to have a ligation. So I think those
wouldn't
are the scenes, but they're very frustrated.
For distribution or for, I mean, is this something that they'll ask to be cut?
No, I think the country's also, and that's why I wanted to make this film at this time, because I think the country's turning a corner. I think it's tethering its ties to the church, because there was a reproductive health bill that was very controversial, but passed. It's now law. That's a whole other story. It doesn't have funding. There's no will to go up against the church. But the present president, who is definitely very controversial, President Duterte, he has his own problems. But he actually is for implementing the reproductive health law. Not because he's pro-women, no, he's sort of misogynist, but he's anti-church, so that's why he's going up against the church.
We can get
exactly,
it,
right? Okay, we're like, okay, whatever, just do it. Yeah.
Right. I think, do we have time for one more? Very hard to see. Yes. And then here.
Do you know if the mortality rate for mothers and or babies is higher in this hospital, in this baby factory, than other?
Is it higher in Fabelia? You know, I don't know that. I don't know that it's higher. And everyone wants. We saw very little. Given the numbers, we saw very little stillbirths there. We were only also there for 6 weeks. So from what we saw, this is purely anecdotal. There were more live births. I mean, we filmed so many live births compared to DODs. Dead on delivery, yeah. So I don't know if it's higher there.
Yeah. And you here, sir?
Yeah, I actually have two questions. One, I think you have already answered. I mean, you said that you want to have carte blanche. So did you have the carte blanche at the end also from the hospital, or was there any kind of influence? And the second one, what happened to your original project?
Okay. So to your first question, yes, we were given carte blanche access to every part of the hospital except the neonatal intensive care unit. I tried till the very end, you know, because we're documentary filmmakers, we never take no for an answer. Because if we do, we'll never make these films. So I tried, but that was like, they really put their foot down. And that was the only place. And they know they didn't have any editorial control. That would be a deal breaker, actually. The first project was actually about the reproductive health bill. I wanted to follow this bill coursing through the Philippine Congress. And all the bill, the bill wanted universal access to contraception, early sex education, and prenatal health care. Very simple. You would think, okay, no-brainer, that, but very controversial because the church was against it. But I felt like the country was turning a corner. There was so much cultural drama around it that I wanted to make that film. But when I got to the Philippines, I realized it wasn't as dramatic as I imagined it to be. And then, so when I got to the hospital, you know, obviously that is where it was. And then the bill turned, you know, it passed. It's now law, but like I said, I think it's tied up in the courts because the church said it was unconstitutional for some reason. So it's caught up in the courts. But now President Duterte signed an executive order to implement it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for all of your questions.
So don't forget to check out the documentary Motherland. And here's an appropriate song from Kalantog ng Sound in Tagalog, Babae. At kung kaya mong isipin, kaya mong gawin, from Joey Ayala. You're listening to Pawikan, the only Pinoy radio in Zurich. My name is Papo, and with me is Julie. Till next time.
Thank you. isang hakbang lamang at ika'y makakarating tulad ng puno na galing sa binhi ang mga dakilang gaway nagmumula sa guni-guni. Malaya sa mundong puno ng panlupil, buhayin sa sarili ang malayang paraan at sa araw-araw na pagkikitungo sa isang hakbang lamang at ika'y makakarating tulad ng puno na galing sa binhi ang mga dakilang gaway nagmumula sa guni-guni. Kung ang nais mo'y maging payapa sa mundong puno ng digmaan, buhayin sa sarili ang payapang paraan at sa araw-araw na pagkikituro sa tahanan at lipunan. Payapang paraan, kung kaya mong isipin, kaya mong gawin, isa-isang hakbang lamang at ika'y makakarating, tulad ng puno na galing sa binhi, ang mga dakilang gaway nagmumula sa guni-guni. Kaya mong isipin, kaya mong gawin, isa-isang hakbang lamang at ika'y makakarating, tulad ng puno na galing sa binti, ang mga dakilang gaway nagmumula sa guni-guni. Ang mga dakilang gaway nagmumula sa guni-guni.
Das politische, feministische, kulturelle und experimentelle Radioprogramm für Zürich ist auf ständige Unterstützung angewiesen.
Radio Lora, Programm für Alternative Politik, Feministik, kulturell, experimental für Zürich. Was ne favorin tuai de favorin tonst na programmi.
Deshalb werde Mitglied und unterstütze die Programmalternative mit deinem Beitrag auf das Konto 80-144-03-9.
Contributi juaj për ne do të ishte mirë se ardhur për këtë radio alternative në këtë konto numër 80-144-03-9.
050-144-03-9.
Date 0 vis ni 4-4-03 vis nand.